Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Coming at you live from Auto Trader, here's New Car Energy.
They're searching inventory. You can make a budget for your wallet to help you succeed. It's smarter car shopping just for
Find
you.
Find your next ride at autotrader.com, powered by Auto Intelligence.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now, imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With the Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Check out the link in the description for more information on rates and fees. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy.
The Gemini credit card is issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice, and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other cost information, see rates and fees. The Gemini credit card may not be used to make gambling-related purchases.
Well, good morning, or good afternoon. It's one of those two. John Grayson here with you. It's a little after 1 o'clock, so it must be afternoon. Lots going on the program today. We are indeed going to have a conversation with Leslie Marshall a little bit later on. She was going to try and join us on National Radio Day last week, but life got in the way. We weren't able to make it happen, so we figured, hey, she's still fun to talk to. So she'll be here with us a little later on. My dog tried to kill me this morning. And before we get into the meat of the show, and yes, I will explain how and why my dog tried to kill me this morning, but I have to. I'm looking up at the TV right in this room just a few minutes ago, and Good Morning America happens to be on, which is why I said good morning when we came back. I don't know why Good Morning America is on at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, but okay, whatever. Maybe they were replaying a clip from this morning. But they were talking to a business expert and discussing the controversy over the Cracker Barrel logo. And I have to ask you, have we all gone collectively stupid? I mean, did I miss the day when we all had our brains sucked out of our heads? In a million years, I could not be moved to care at all about Cracker Barrel or any other corporate logo. But good Lord, people are losing their minds. So my only conclusion is that, yes, we have indeed all gone collectively stupid. Now, to move into the area of what happened on Friday, this, boy, what an absolutely awful scene. But I'll credit David Bellavia for pointing out how incredibly well everybody that was involved in the response and the entire area just kind of pulled together like we do. I mean, this is who we are. You know, when somebody needs help, we help. But it was the most eerie feeling because my sister and I were headed out to Costco in Rochester on Friday. We left right about noon. And from her house, there's two ways to kind of to get to the 90 that are about equidistant. Transit Road is one of them and Pembroke is the other one. And we decided to drive out east on 5 and go to the Pembroke entrance and get onto the 90 from there and just go out to Rochester. So as we were waiting on that left that you have to make to get to the entrance ramp, we're waiting at the light and three fire vehicles went flying by us. One was a truck and two of them, you know, like a fire truck, and two of them were like the fire chief SUVs. And they go flying, tearing by us. And we had no idea what was going on. We were just talking to each other. You know, we're on our way to go shopping and we're just, you know, shooting the breeze. And these guys go flying by us and got onto the thruway. And I thought, okay, wreck? And I got a really bad feeling about it because normally, even if it's a bad wreck, you don't see fire rescue. You see cops, maybe both. But all we saw was fire and rescue, and I just started to get a really bad... My first thought was, it's a car fire. It's a wreck where a fire started, which would explain all of the fire vehicles. Obviously, now we know it wasn't that. But we made our trip, and, you know, it's about 3 hours to get out there, do the shopping, get everything packed up, and head home. And that's when we got a text from my wife, who stayed back at the house with the dogs, and she said... do not take the thruway home. It's closed somewhere around here. And I flashed to it and went, oh, that's got to be what that was, where those fire vehicles were going. So we thought about it and we're like, okay, should we take five? But if we take five, we got to get through Batavia and it's a mess. So no, let's go all the way down to 20 and we'll take that back in. And we cut back up to the 33. Is it 77 that goes by Darien Lake? Is that whatever road that is that goes right by the theme park at Darien Lake? And we came up that way. And there's a reason why I'm telling you this part of the story, and it's this. That is also obviously the road that you take to get to the Pembroke entrance onto the 90. So when we got to what eventually becomes Genesee Street to make the left to, you know, finish the drive, both sides of the intersection were stacked with cars and trucks, mostly semis. And I thought, oh, wow, I didn't even think about this. We're still going to have a traffic problem here. Because up until that point, we really didn't have any. But it was stunning. And it's, I mean, it's, this is not about me. I'm not going, look at me. We got through the traffic. Okay. Obviously, there's much more to the story than that. But it was stunning to me to see how far back, once we made that turn onto 33, how far back everybody was just stopped. And think about how far that is from the Galleria entrance, or the Galleria exit, all the way out to Darien Lake. Now, imagine trying to make that drive with a roadway that is completely congested and nobody's moving. I can't imagine how many hours people must have sat out there while the investigation was going on. It was also stunning to see, by the way, the effort that it took to get that bus uprighted, because as we were, you know, kind of watching the goings on Friday afternoon and into Friday evening, saw that video of not one, not two, but three of those giant tow trucks, the crane trucks, the ones that they used to help semi trucks, you know, those big, huge things. And they're all attached to that bus in one way or another and trying to get the thing upright. They finally did. And now the investigation continues. But I mean, to have that kind of loss of life and just the human cost. I mean, the other thing obviously that we kept seeing as we were making the drive home was the helicopters that were going back and forth to ECMC. And just the human toll that must have taken, even for the survivors. And I mean, they were talking about people trapped under the bus. I hate to even think about it, you know, but if you're looking for the sort of light at the end of the tunnel, obviously for the deceased, there isn't one. But for the people that did make it, the fact that you had that many people, including two people who were in surgery by Friday mid-afternoon and are now in the intensive care unit at ECMC, to have every single one of them told, or we were told, that they're likely to recover, that they didn't expect to see anybody, any further loss of life out of this, which is, again, just stunning. And you think about how in a terrible, terrible tragedy like that, how lucky it is that that didn't happen 150 or 200 miles farther east. Because, I mean, to have a level 1 trauma center within, what, a 10-minute helicopter flight? made a massive difference. So to everybody that was involved in that, to all of the first responders and all of the medical staff at ECMC and the other hospitals, Children's, and the other hospitals in the area that had to take the ones who were not as critically injured, to every single one of them, I mean, you are once again owed a debt. You did such an amazing, amazing job. And again, it's another reason to pat this area, to sort of pat ourselves on the back and say, we have the ability to do this. And when called upon, we do. And everybody pulls together and everybody pulls. So that was really, really great to see. But it was such an eerie feeling to know that in space and time, we were that close to it. And I can't tell you how glad I am that we decided to get on at Pembroke rather than getting on at Transit Road, because it probably already was a mess by then. So, yeah, not a fun day, but the people who we depend on in situations like that to do their jobs and do them at top level fashion did it. And of course they did, because we are who we are. Now, that said, we move now into the investigation part of this. And if you want in on this, by the way, you're more than welcome. If you've got something you want to throw in, or if you were caught up in that mess Friday afternoon and want to talk about what you had to sit through, by all means, 803-0930 is the phone number to either call or text, and you can get involved that way. But, you know, now the investigation turns to what happened. As we were talking about with David, the fact that the driver not only survived, but was in good enough shape to be able to be questioned by the authorities there at the scene. And you heard during our top of the hour news that the driver is cooperating. The tour bus company is cooperating. Everybody is cooperating. So they already, it's a little weird, by the way, maybe it's just me, but to hear officials say, yeah, we've got a pretty good idea what caused the crash, but we're not saying right now. Really? Why not? Who are you protecting? I mean, if everybody's cooperating, then, you know, the witness statements are going to be probably the best you're going to get. And yeah, it's quote unquote just witness statements. But what else is there? I mean, you've already seen the video. If there's any investigative if there's any investigative value in that videotape, well, you're already there. You've already seen that. And you've already questioned the witnesses. So, okay. I think we'd all kind of like to know what was going on there. And like David said, I mean, if it turns out that it was distraction from a cell phone or a tablet or something like that, that's one thing. I think we just right now want to know, okay, the driver ripped the wheel to the left, or drifted to the left, I should say, and got into the median. And then overcorrected, just rip the wheel back the other way to try to get back on the road. Well, with a bus, you can't do that for obvious reasons. And it was the thing that happened. So I don't know where this goes from here. I mean, already as of Friday evening, people were looking into the tour bus company and their record. And their record, I mean, after an event like this, everybody is going to focus on the mistakes. They're going to focus on the bad news about the tour company. So you heard, oh, where there were this many critical failures when they had their safety inspections, and there were this many drivers that were cited, or what, and the number of drivers that were cited was one. But those things are going to stick out because we're looking for them. It's confirmation bias. So in truth, the tour bus company is a little better than average. If you take into account tour bus companies across the country, they're a little better than average when it comes to their safety record overall. Because any company like that, they're going to have violations here or there. You know, your brakes are a thousandth of an inch too thin, so you get cited for that. It's that kind of thing. And I don't know what their list is, so some of those safety failures may have been worse than others, but you could also look at that and say, yeah, but that's irrelevant to this incident. This incident was not an equipment failure based on what we know already. So, okay, yeah, scrutinize that. Sure, absolutely. But don't take it as, oh, this was some, you know, garbage tour bus company that was violating all kinds of rules and this was bound to happen sooner or later. That may be, but that would be getting way, way, way ahead of the story. And I'm not going to do that. So the people who need to look into that are going to continue to look into it. They mentioned also the language barrier, because most of the people that were on that tour bus were from Southeast Asia and the Indian subcontinent. So you had a lot of people didn't speak English and needed interpreters. And that was another thing that as of Friday afternoon, they had that pretty well locked down, too. They were like, no, we've got people who are, you know, able to bridge the language barrier. So it's all good. And now on we go. I don't know. I don't have a good gut on this one. And I kind of wish that I did. But I don't know where this one's going to go. I think there is still a lot that we don't know. In addition to the what it is that the authorities believe caused the crash in the first place. But I think there's a lot we don't know, and that's not a great position to be in when you're doing this for a living, because we like to talk about the details of stories like this, and in this case, we just don't have any. But again, I mean, to everybody that was involved in the response to this, just absolute pat on the back for that. And we'll continue to watch as... as more news about the investigation comes out, we'll get more information on that and try to stay on top of it as best we can. But yeah, to the victims and to the families and everybody else, just heartfelt sympathy for everything that you've gone through and everything that you're going to go through, because recovery for a lot of those people is going to be a very, very long road. A couple of things going on elsewhere in the world. And again, we're going to have Leslie Marshall with us just about 15 minutes from now. So make sure you stick around for that. We'll do a little talking old Buffalo radio and just, you know, we'll find out what Leslie's been up to, because it's been a minute since we've had a conversation as well. So in addition to that, to just kind of take some of the curse off of things, we'll get to some of the more amusing stories that are going on out there between now and the bottom of the hour, starting where you can only ever start a segment like this in Florida, because this could not have happened anywhere else. If you're mad at a significant other, or maybe even an ex-significant other, and you decide you're going to take it out on their belongings, do me one favor before you do that. Make sure it's actually their stuff. Yes, a woman in Lee County, Florida, is wanted for violating her probation after she attacked a pickup truck that she believed was her ex-boyfriend's. You already know where this one's going. Yes, 55-year-old Dream Benjamin was arrested for showing up at a Lee County home. Lee County, by the way, is like Fort Myers. It's southwest Florida. It's on the Gulf. They call it the Lee Island Coast. Marco Island's down there. It's really nice. It's a beautiful area, but it's Florida, so you still got your, you know, quota of nutcases around. So she attacked the truck with a crowbar. And yes, it turns out she had the wrong truck. And the actual owner was left with thousands of dollars worth of damage. She was taken to jail for the night and pleaded guilty. Then she was placed on 60 months probation, so 5 years worth of probation she's going to get out of this. And this is not her first go around. Like I said, she was wanted on a VOP. She has 3 prior arrests, and I know this will shock you, for drugs and other probation violations. Yeah, maybe lay off the pipe a little bit and you won't end up attacking some dude's car that you've never met in your life. Meanwhile, not in Florida. And again, I don't know how this is the case either, because some of these stories, you look at them and you go, okay, that had to have happened in Florida. But no, this one comes to us out of California, where thankfully the Burbank butt sniffer has been arrested. He has been placed in custody once again. According to Channel 4 NBC Los Angeles, a man previously arrested for inappropriate behavior was taken into custody once again for allegedly sniffing a woman's behind inside a Walgreens in Burbank. Police said 38-year-old Kalise Crowder, also known by officers as the Butt Sniffer, original name, was recognized by store employees who reported the incident before 11 p.m. Officers arrived on the scene, did their investigation. They said it happened at a Nordstrom Rack, where this guy was following a woman around in the women's department and sexually harassing her by leaning over, crouching near her, and engaging in lewd behavior by inappropriately sniffing her buttocks, police said in a statement. How'd you like to have to be the cop that wrote that report? We've got him. We got the butt sniffer. For inappropriately sniffing her buttocks, police said in a statement regarding the incident that took place in July. Now, got just a couple of minutes before the bottom of the hour. However, I want to make something clear here. I am not in any way defending this guy's behavior, okay? With what I'm about to say, I am not coming to his defense because I think he's a creep. However, I wonder what they're going to do about the fact that he never touched her. Now, granted, and we talked about this a little bit last Wednesday when you and I were together, you don't have to touch somebody to commit a crime. We explained, at least in Florida, and it may be this way here too, I'm just not that familiar with the law, that assault does not constitute physical touching. That's battery. If you touch somebody against their will, that's battery. Assault is the threat. So if you make somebody feel scared, the easiest example is you and I are in an argument and I pull my fist back like I'm just going to lay into you. That's assault. If you believe that I'm going to follow through and actually throw that punch, that's assault. That's the threat of violence. If I pull through on the punch, that's battery. So maybe they're going for something like this. So it wouldn't be sexual battery, but it could be sexual assault if they can make the case that he did indeed make her afraid by what he was doing or make her feel like she was being sexually attacked, like there was something creepy and weird going on. So either way, I think it's going to be an interesting case to watch. I never thought I would say, you know, we got to keep an eye on that butt sniffer case because this could be an interesting legal precedent, but I think it could. So we'll let you know. I mean, they just got him into custody, so it's going to be a little while. I think California is probably a little bit backed up as far as the court dockets are concerned. But, you know, whenever there is movement in the butt sniffer case, you got to believe that NBC Channel 4 out of Los Angeles is going to be on top of it. We'll have a conversation in just a little while with Leslie Marshall, ex of the area, and, you know, just kind of hanging around doing her media person thing. And we'll find out what's going on with her and do a little talking about Buffalo Radio in the old days in just a little bit. Stick with us. John Grayson in for Joe Beamer on a Monday.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Coming at you live from Auto Trader, here's New Car Energy.
They're searching inventory. You can make a budget for your wallet to help you succeed. It's smarter car shopping just
for
you.
Find your next ride at autotrader.com, powered by Auto Intelligence.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is. With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. One, it's $15 a month. Two, seriously, it's $15 a month. Three, no big contract. Four, I use it. Five, my mom uses it.
Are you playing me off?
That's what's happening, right? Okay, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
John Grayson in for Joe Beamer on this Monday afternoon. By the way, quick update from Good Morning America. They are no longer covering the Cracker Barrel controversy. They have moved on to hawking a $170 depuffing wand. Tanner, you got a good depuffing wand? Because if not, I know where you can get one.
I can't say that I do, and I never plan on having one. So,
have you been puffed? I guess is probably the operative question, because if you've never been puffed, then you don't need a depuffing wand.
No, I've never been puffed.
Okay, good. All right, good. We've got that down. I also have never been puffed, so I'm going to keep my $170. Now, we mentioned to you a little while ago that on National Radio Day last Wednesday, we had reached out to the lovely and talented Leslie Marshall, and she was made every effort to be here on the air with us, and unfortunately, life got in the way, but we figured, you know what, she's always fun to talk to anyway, and so she kindly agreed to sit in with us a little while here. Hello, Leslie.
Hey, John, how are you?
It has been a minute. How are you?
I'm doing good. Yeah, it has been a minute.
Fantastic. Yeah, thank you so much for joining us. And like we said, we just wanted to kind of talk over a little bit of Buffalo radio from the old days and revisit some of the things that were going on when this was your home. And I guess one of the first things I wanted to talk to you about was the guy whose show I'm sitting in on right now, because I know you and Beamer have known each other for forever.
Yeah, Joe worked on my radio show, not my Buffalo radio show, but my national radio show, my second national radio show.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was part of the Leslie Marshall Show crew. So, yeah, I've known Joe since he's a youngin' and seen him, you know, grow up, get married, have a child, maybe has more than one now, I don't know. And then also go from, like, you know, being like, you know, an intern and assistant producer to on air. And John, you and I certainly know that, you and I know that journey.
Yeah, that is a well-trod path. And we've all been there. And it's funny, too, because you mentioned the syndication bit, because I remember when that happened, because we carried your show when I was down at WFLA. And I thought, oh, this is awesome. I mean, because we had met just a couple of years before was it Franklin Street where the GR studios were at that point?
Yeah, WGR was on Franklin Street at that time, yes.
Yeah, and we met there and obviously became friends and, you know, and all of that. And then all of a sudden, I get back to Tampa and a little bit of time goes by and the announcement comes in that we've picked up the Leslie Marshall Show. And I went, oh, that's awesome. So when you got that call, because my own journey into syndication was much, much later, and it was a kind of a different world by then. But when you got that call that, yes, you're not going to be just doing radio in one city now, you're going to be everywhere in the United States, how did that happen?
Oh, God. Okay. Well, when I was in Buffalo, I'm not going to say every name because some people don't like, you know, their names. But when I was in Buffalo, there were two people in New York who were talking to me and I didn't know had their eye on me at that time. I don't know if I'm supposed to, like, puff myself up. But the people in Buffalo may not remember this, but there was this woman named Leslie Marshall who beat Rush Limbaugh, and it was like, who is this woman? And they actually wrote, I think, three lines about me in Time magazine, and it got some people's attention. And one of them was Sally Jesse Raphael.
Oh.
I'm sounding really old now, right? Sally Jesse Raphael's, you know, the boss there at ABC. And he had me fill in for her. He was looking at me for syndication. And at the time I filled in, I definitely should not have been giving advice. The fact that I did 3 hours giving advice is very scary and dangerous. He told me I didn't have enough life experiences. But they did think I had, they liked the fact I was youthful. They liked the fact I was female. And they liked the fact I wasn't a conservative. Sorry for the conservatives there. There was a guy named Michael, C is his last initial, and ABC had a radio division that was still part of ABC. It was the ABC Satellite Radio Network, but it was also called, it was in conjunction with Daynet. You probably remember all this.
Oh,
time.
Yeah.
And Tom Snyder started to do at CNBC a TV show. And for some reason, I don't know why, I think it was dumb, but CNBC didn't want him doing both radio and TV. So he had to get rid of his TV show, a radio show, excuse me. And they offered it to me. Now, I knew, not just, well, when I was in Buffalo, the guy who was the head of Sally Jesse Raphael sent me flowers after that Time magazine thing. And it said, roses are red, violets are blue, become a star in Buffalo, and the network awaits you.
Nice.
So I was like, great. Just to let you know, and I won't say his name, he never hired me. But so then after Buffalo, I went around to different stations, filling in, all over the place. And then I got an offer, in case people are wondering, where did Leslie go? I actually went in between that and syndication to Houston, Texas. And I did not want to go to Houston, Texas, because, I mean, I'm from Boston originally, but I'm a Northeast girl, which
sure.
I consider Buffalo is definitely the Northeast compared to Texas. And I went down there in communication with the network, and very nice boss, Don A. And when I got the, I kept getting a phone call, and I didn't believe it. And the offer came over the fax machine in the newsroom. The entire newsroom.
Yes.
Yeah. So the newsroom at KPRC in Houston knew before I did, and I was just like, don't say anything. And I like ran to Don's office, and I'm like, got to talk. And he was so wonderful. They let me, he was like, I'm not going to hold you back. They let me out of my contract.
That's great.
They sent me flowers. They were really great. And they couldn't carry me on their station, but they carried me on a sister station just outside of Houston. And, it was just great. So that's actually how I knew. And then Tom Snyder, he had me on as his guest on his last show and passed the torch to me.
Yeah.
And I will forever be grateful because nobody knew, I shouldn't say nobody, except for a few markets I had worked in. Most people had no idea who the heck I was. So he had hundreds of affiliates that we were going to lose that gave me a chance. And fortunately, the ratings held and we were able to retain most of them. But I owe Tom for that, because if he had not done that, I probably would have I probably wouldn't be me today talking to you right now.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny, too, because I from that trip, I had a whole bunch of GR swag that I brought back to Tampa with me and all of this stuff. And I don't know if you know this. We're kind of right now in the middle of a move. So
I do. A very big move.
Very big move. Yeah, right. Across the ocean.
Can I say where it is?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we talked about it a little bit last week about going to Portugal. And so as I was gathering all my stuff, and I mean, we were seriously downsizing because you don't want to carry stuff with you. You don't have to. So I was getting rid of everything, and I'm just going through and going through all these drawers and things. And I pulled out this folder. Like a folder you would take to class when you were a kid. And it was right. Just full. And I opened it up, and it's nothing but radio stuff. It's, show sheets from back when and things like
wow.
that. And autographed pictures I got from guests and things like that. And I'm going through all of these memories and not packing, and just totally going through all of it. And I found a bunch of that stuff that I had from GR. And Leslie, I swear to you, I have for a good time, call Leslie WGR.
Oh, Leslie, oh my God. Yeah.
I have the bumper stickers.
Oh, my God, yeah.
So,
oh, yeah, they used to, when I was syndicated, we had pillowcases that said, go to bed with Leslie Murray. I swear to God, the things that we did then that we could never do now, but yeah.
Exactly, yeah. So tell me about working at GR at that point, because I never did. I mean, wanted to, sure, but, never got the opportunity and lived in different cities and things like that. So what was the vibe there? Because it was, if I remember the lineup right, I don't remember the morning show, but afternoon drive was JR. And you...
I was there before JR, but yeah, I think this is how it went. I think it was Tom Bowerly.
Right.
And then it was, I believe, what's his name? Terrible. It was syndicated. It was an older gentleman.
Right.
Now I'm showing my age because I can't remember. It'll come to me. Then it was me. Then it was JR. Then it was Art Wander.
Right, who we just lost.
I know, so. I know. Loved him. And then John Otto.
Yeah, I mean, and so, I mean, the cool thing about radio back then is that, obviously, talk show hosts were opinionated, and you know, we go and we wear those opinions on our sleeve. And now that can get a little bit treacherous from time to time. So I don't hear as much of it. But the other thing about that is that I remember, you know, like at my station, my first station in Tampa, you had Jay Marvin, who was way over on the left, and you had Mark Davis.
Jay Marvin and I were up for the same job at WFLA in Tampa.
Oh, no kidding.
Gabe H. hired him, but then when I was syndicated, Gabe took my show, so all was forgiven. And Jay and I were very good friends, and you know, I know his wife, another great that we've lost.
Yeah, well, you know who Jay Marvin's board op was back then?
No.
Me.
Really? I didn't know you were Jay's board op.
Oh, yeah, for like 3 or 4 years. And then he moved off to Milwaukee and then Chicago. But yeah, Jay is sadly we lost him last year too, one of my best friends in the entire world. So yeah, but he, you know, you had these two guys who were polar opposite of each other. One followed the other on that station. But they were best friends, you know, that's the way the vibe was in all of these stations, is that we were all pulling in the same direction. We're all trying to make the ratings go up here. So what are we going to do? Fight with each other?
Yeah, no, wow. I'll tell you, I'm not just saying this because I'm on radio in Buffalo. There are people that think I'm from Buffalo. I only lived in when it was on the air locally in Buffalo for 1 year. Both my first and second syndicated shows were carried. As a matter of fact, I'm not sure it was this station. I think it was a couple other stations that took them. But it was really one of the greatest. Yeah, you know, I'm very blessed to have had many years that I can say were the greatest years of my life. But that was one of the greatest years of my life. I have friends still, you know, from then. And let me give you a little peek of what it was like at WGR back in the day. I was living in Miami, Florida. I was on a station at the time called WNWS, which I think may be back. Mm-hmm. And my boss called me in and he said, you need to get another job because we've been bought by Spanish radio. And I said, I speak Spanish. And he goes, no, they're going to be like playing Spanish music. You know, like there's no room for you here, unless I was thinking of changing my last name to Martinez just for the on-air thing. But so I had to get an agent. I got this agent in Chicago, never had one before. And I sent my tape to different places. And there's a guy, if he's listening, he's in Buffalo still. His name was Doug with the Y and last name. And Doug said, you know, there's an opening in Buffalo. Send me your stuff. And at that time, it meant a cassette. This makes me sound like a dinosaur.
Uh-huh. I remember.
A cassette tape, my resume. And I used to put a picture because there weren't many women. And, you know, back in the day, I was cute. So I was like, okay. And I sent it in and I never heard anything. And he was like, I don't understand. Like I gave it, you know, to the, you know, program director. So the program director left and Doug said to me, there's a new management team. And this was literally a few months later. I think it was like November to March, that much of a difference, you know? And, they called me up and they were like, you know, who are you? This is fantastic, this cassette. And they flew me in and I was on the air for 1 week. And on Thursday, I can say his name. He's a consultant who, Randy Michaels. Randy Michaels walked in while I was on the air and offered me the job on the air.
Wow.
And so it was a little bit of pressure because you're on the air. And, you know, I mean, I had other cassettes out there in other markets. And no offense, but I mean, I thought I was going to die coming in with the wind and like, you know, it was freezing in April with the rain. And I'm from the Boston area, so I know cold weather, but coming from Miami, it was like, do I really want to do this again?
Yeah.
And but I accepted the job. I loved it. They changed the time a bit. I think it was supposed to be like 9 to noon. Then it became like, you know, 10 to two. You know, I don't know. I think I went from 3 hours to four back to three. It was whatever they did. The people of Buffalo made me feel at home so quickly. And back in the day, WGR was the home for the Bills, the Bisons, the Sabres, and the lacrosse team.
Yep.
And oh my God, the parties. As a matter of fact, I don't know if Jim wants me to tell this. They wanted Jim Kelly and I to date because he, you know, I was like the new thing on radio and they carried, you know, and that wasn't going to happen. If Jim's listening, oh, love you, buddy. I'm so glad we married the people we did, not each other, and date each other. It was just such a fun time. There was just so much to do all the time. I mean, I I don't think I ever slept. It was just, you know, we went out to eat and then, you know, we went, you know, for drinks and then, you know, you went to the baseball game or you went to watch like a band play, you know, at the stadium. And the other thing was although there were people from Buffalo at WGR, there were a lot of transplants. And so we did things like we couldn't leave town at Thanksgiving. So this is true. I was only there 1 year. I had given to the boss, I requested Thanksgiving off, Christmas off, and he was like, you have Christmas, you can't have Thanksgiving. And I had never spent Thanksgiving away from my family in Massachusetts. And I was on the air. And I remember thinking, who's going to be listening on Thanksgiving, A, and B? How cruel are you that I can't have the day off?
Yeah.
You know? But, and it was like other people had the day off. So I thought, I'm talking to myself, people brought me food.
Oh.
I mean, restaurants dropped off food.
Yes.
Families dropped off food. We had so much food. The crew was, like, loving it because they were just, like, you know, cry. So basically what I did is I did a festive. I was Leslie Marshall Wines that she has to work on Thanksgiving. And people brought. And then after, we all went to JR's house. And that was before Susie had moved up, his wife. And we had a great time because everybody who didn't live in Buffalo or come from Buffalo went there, and it was pretty much like that. So honestly, we were like a family. John Otto and I did a column together for the Metro News. You know, Art Wander and I, you know, he was a sports guy and I was a political girl, yet we were at these functions for GR all the time. We were truly, truly like a family. And to this day, people that have left Buffalo, most of us stay in touch. We'll, you know, and think fondly of each other. And it's wild because it really was just 1 year of my life, and it was an incredible year. And I'm really glad. And honestly, Buffalo, and I'm not just saying this, is a beautiful city, beautiful people, great food, great stuff to do. You know, winters can be rough, but you know, hey, that's what the bar is for, right?
Yep.
And I mean, it just I was very sad when I had to leave Buffalo. It ended up being better for my career, but I didn't expect to leave. Everybody knows that. I'll be very frank. I was fired.
Yeah.
And everybody was like, how does somebody who almost tripled the ratings get fired? But, you know, that's a conversation for not on the air.
Exactly. Well, you know what, Leslie? I knew, because it always does when you and I get to talking, that this was going to fly by. And right. And I'm so glad that even happy belated National Radio Day, that even though we didn't get to do it last Wednesday, I'm so glad that you were able to come on with us today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, John, and love you all, Buffalo. If anybody listening remembers me from back in the day, I loved being a part of the community.
You got it, Leslie. Take care, and we will talk sooner than this next time. So take care. We'll keep you posted on what's going
on. Definitely, and definitely before you go to Portugal, and I know I have a place to stay when I come over.
You got it.
Bye.
All right. Take care of yourself. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Peace. There is plenty more to come. John Grayson here with you, in for Joe Beamer. It is a Monday afternoon. We've got a lot to get into in the next hour of the show. We're going to catch up a little bit on the Granville situation because that all broke last week after you and I had parted ways on Wednesday. So we'll get back into some of that and some of the new news that's coming out about where that investigation is headed. We'll get you up to speed with all of that and plenty more. We've got lots of fun coming up in the next hour as well. Stay with us. And if you want in, 803-0930 is the way to do it, on the phone or on the text line. Plenty more on the way. Hour number two of the program, John Grayson in for Joe Beamer on this Monday afternoon. Glad to have you along. And as we sit here, we got a bunch to get into this hour. If you want in, 803-0930, as always, 803-0930. And I would love to hear from you on this because this incident happened when I wasn't here. So obviously, I mean, having lived in Kansas City for the last 4 or 5 years, when the wrecks that DJ Granville was involved in happened, all I had was what I was reading. Now, you were here and lived it, so if I screw up or you need to fill in some blanks for me, absolutely. Feel free to do so, 803-0930. But now that we have a guilty plea and a sentence, or not a sentence, but a suspension, and now the investigation is apparently turning to the other officers who were on the scene that night who are being accused of a cover-up. there was one particular line in what the, I believe it was the police commissioner had to say about this, that really stuck in my craw. Because I would love to believe that there will eventually become a day where we put this blue wall of silence nonsense behind us, but it obviously hasn't happened yet. And I want to make clear, I draw a distinction between the people who are being investigated and the people who are witnesses, who they may have talked to or whatever, that somebody knows what happened. And all of the idea, if you don't know from this crash, by the way, if you also were, moved in from out of town within the last year or whatever, this all happened when when DJ Granville, who was not just an Erie County Sheriff, but was the head of the narcotics unit for the Erie County Sheriff's Office, was involved in a series of car wrecks. He hit seven cars, and there was apparently some kind of investigation that happened on the scene, but none of the details of that have been released. We don't know if he was given a breathalyzer. We don't know if there was a sobriety test. All of that has people asking, okay, if there was a sobriety test, what were the results? And if he was indeed drinking, why wasn't anything done about that? And if there wasn't a sobriety test, for the love of Pete, why not? I mean, it's on video. He just, seven cars in a row, bang, 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 bang. So, and then left the scene. And it has been part of the investigators, part of their frustration with this is that they're not getting any help out of the police department. They're out of the sheriff's office or out of the police department. And that needs to stop. I don't care what their job is. If somebody broke the law, and whether it was him or other officers who may have covered up for him or whatever, if somebody broke the law, they need to be called to account for that. And a 30-day suspension, by the way, is not it. It can't be, right? Because, look, this is the line from the story. And this again, yeah, this is Garcia. This is the Erie County Sheriff's Office has concluded its internal investigation into the multi-vehicle accident that occurred on April 11th, 2024. DJ Granville has been suspended without pay for a period of 30 working days. I did take into consideration the fact that Granville has been an exemplary employee with no previous history of discipline or misconduct. Really? Huh. Why? Because you know what? I've also been an exemplary employee with no previous history of discipline or misconduct, but I'm pretty sure that if I bashed into seven cars on my way home from here today, that I would probably go to jail. So I don't care. He's been an exemplary employee with no previous history of discipline or misconduct. That makes absolutely no difference for me. If a crime was committed here, he should be in jail. So I don't know what to say about this. And the idea, I mean, I was always told, everybody's equal under the law. Nobody gets special treatment. It doesn't matter what your job is. It doesn't matter who you are or your station in the community. Now, obviously, we know that's pie in the sky nonsense. But that's the ideal. That's what we're supposed to be, right? Is the place where everybody is viewed equally by the law, that nobody is above it. And for somebody to make the case that because someone is a cop or someone is whatever, a talk show host or someone is a convenience store employee, that their treatment under the law should be different based on what their job is, runs counter to everything we're supposed to be about. And so I don't know why this hasn't filtered down to the people who are involved in this. And like I said, I draw a distinction between witnesses and the people who are being investigated. Obviously, if you're being investigated, your attorney is going to tell you, you shut your mouth right now and you do not utter a word because you have a Fifth Amendment protection against self-incrimination, right? So that is sacrosanct. That has to stay there. So for them to say, no, I'm one of the people being investigated. I'm not going to answer any questions. I'm not going to say anything because anything I say could come back on me later. You don't have to do that. However, for everybody else that's involved in this, for every other member of the police department, the sheriff's office, who knows something about this and is holding back, stop. Please stop. Because justice needs to be served here. That was an incident where, and I know, I mean, part of the case that they're trying to make here is, well, it's property damage. Okay, it's also leaving the scene of a wreck, but, you know, we'll leave that out for a second. It's property damage. It's, it, you know, so a bunch of cars got hit and people were inconvenienced and they may have been monetarily damaged from all of this. That's the kind of thing that you handle in civil court. Okay? Right, okay, and I get that piece of it. However, that is only blind luck. If one person had been in between two of those cars, we would be talking about a very different situation here. It was incredibly dangerous what happened. And it was only through blind luck that it didn't end up a much uglier situation. So, no, I don't buy, well, it's just property damage. It's not that big a deal. Especially when you're talking about the potential. And this is why the field sobriety test, that we don't know if there was one, is such a vital linchpin in this entire story. Because if there was a field sobriety test and they swept it under the rug because it would make him look bad, oh, that's going to be ugly. Now, we do not know that. I want to make that very clear. We don't know. We don't know any of the answers to this. But this is why it's so galling not to have any of those answers. A year and a half after the incident happened, is that, you know, if there was some kind of cover-up that they were actively involved in, then yes, obviously we're talking about a much different degree of criminality. Those details would be great. And if it turns out that there was, that there was illegal behavior, that those wrecks happened because he was under the influence of something, whether it was alcohol or who knows what, Ambien, you know, that takes on a much different sort of characteristic when this is the guy who is in charge of the narcotics unit for the sheriff's department. That's a guy you don't want to have involved in anything involving substance abuse that turns into criminal behavior. And again, that shouldn't have any bearing on his punishment. But just in terms of public opinion on this, that's something that really ought to be a part of the story and a part of the reporting. And it just unfortunately hasn't been yet because nobody is saying anything. And for the Internal Affairs Department inside the Sheriff's Department, guys, it's been 18 months. What are you waiting for? What possible reason is there that investigation into a series of car accidents and into the actions of the officers after that series of car accidents? There is no way in my head that kind of an investigation should take 18 months. So I don't know what's going on. I don't know what the upshot of all of this. Oh, yeah. And thank you, Textline, yes, for reminding me. Not only did he hit seven cars, he was driving the wrong way down a one-way street when he did it. So, yes, appreciate that detail as well. Why are we still sitting here on our thumbs 18 months later with no answers to any of this stuff? We'll go to Rich, who is in Buffalo and joins us next. Hello, Rich.
Hey, John, enjoying your show. I enjoy your style and everything. I agree with your sentiment. I mean, it's obviously something that has to be discussed and looked at, and it's kind of curious of what's been going on, to say the least. But I'd like to comment just on two things. One is early on in your rant. No, it's not really your narrative. You kind of likened what happened to a crime. If you had done, a crime, well, from what we have, the evidence we have, there was no crime. Okay, there was no criminal action committed. All right, a non-moving, a property damage accident or right is not a crime. It's not a misdemeanor, which is punishable by up to 1 year, that President Trump wants to do for burning the flag now, and then or a felony, which is over a year. So that's one thing. The other, it's hard. Boy, this blue line is really getting to be something. I don't know what you know about the community. Their efforts at oversight, they get rebuffed. Yep. You know, civilian committees, even the council. This new guy, the new commissioner that the acting mayor appointed, and he removed a longtime commissioner to go in a different direction, and he's not going to be mayor after the first of the year. This new commissioner was a deputy commissioner, and he went before the council, and right in open council, he called a councilman a grandstander. I mean, this we're in civilian oversight of the military, as you know, you have in the federal and government. We have who watches the watchers,
right?
So if they won't, they won't pay attention to the council. I understand that under advice of their legal counsel, the officers involved in that stop won't speak to a district attorney. So, so we have a problem mainly in the city where it all originated. Now, in terms of, I think the sheriff is a good man. He's trying to do a good job. The saving grace we have for the sheriff is that he's elected by the people, and he's going before the people this year, and I believe he's grown very sensitive to this issue, especially as it's come to light, what, a year later when it was you know, exposed. So he said he can't really do anything until the city completed their investigation and the DA. Now this is the punishment he's meted out. You know, in the paper today, there's a talk of the lieutenant, who's the sister-in-law.
The sister-in-law, right.
Granville, right?
Yep.
I don't know if you mentioned that, John.
Yep.
But, yeah, that she is going to be subject to criminal prosecution or an investigation. Let's be, you know, fair, an investigation. So, I don't know. It's a tough one. We're in a city that is a strong union town. The union also has a lot of political influence, and police are generally, you know, they're the heroes, and they're out in the public. It's the glamour. There's really not glamour anymore in the police job, but they engender a certain kind of loyalty from the citizenry. You know, why are you picking on the police? Don't you want protection? But look, there's a happy medium here. We need civilian oversight.
Yeah.
And historically, sheriffs were politicians and businessmen who maybe served on the county board of supervisors when that was an entity, right? And they were a successful businessman or a politician, and they'd get elected sheriff. I mean, Grover Cleveland was a sheriff. That was a stepping stone for him.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
Yep. I did.
Okay, you know about it.
My dad was a history teacher. I had to.
Oh, well, there you go. So then gradually the sheriffs became more out of the ranks of mostly Buffalo police, but other police departments, and they are now looked on as the top cop, although their constitutional function. And they're a constitutional officer. They are conservator of the peace.
Yeah.
That's what they're called.
Well,
right? And
yeah.
So they're there as a public safety peace officer for the entire county, the highest, you know, public safety officer in the county. So, but it's very policing, even though the sheriff's budget is primarily the corrections facilities. That eats up so much, and the patrol division of the sheriff's department is probably like a large suburban, like an Amherst or Tonawanda police. So, and they don't cover all of the county, and they could. They have jurisdiction, but they don't do regular patrols in every township. So, there's a difference. We've got an elected sheriff, which is some safeguard, but the city just can't seem, even the council can't seem to get these police commanders in line and discipline. I mean, one time I saw a council meeting on the local, you know, whatever cable television, and there were more white shirts in there than council members sitting up there as a show of force.
Right.
I don't know. I think you're onto something. Of course, it's a hot topic, but those are my two cents.
You got it, Rich, and well made. Thank you so much for the call. Yeah, he makes a great point, and unfortunately, I mean, civilian oversight of the police is something that is always met with strong resistance. It's not just happening here. That happens everywhere. And unfortunately, the only thing that tends to break that resistance and have the formation of civilian review boards and things like that is when somebody dies. We're horrible at preventative medicine in this country. We're terrible. And I think, I don't know if it's just this country. I think it's probably just human nature. that we would rather wait for things to completely fall apart and then fix them rather than fixing, you know, rather than preventing them from happening in the first place. You think about, you know, why do we have in tall buildings, why do we have fire escapes? Well, because the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory burned down and a whole bunch of people died. You know, it's the same thing. I was in St. Louis when Ferguson happened. I was doing radio in St. Louis and doing my syndicated show when Ferguson happened. So I was like right there at ground zero. Ferguson is maybe 10 minutes from downtown St. Louis. So, yeah, the people in Ferguson had been asking for a civilian review board of their police department for years and years. And it took Mike Brown dying for that to finally happen. So, yeah, they finally have one, you know, but it doesn't happen until somebody loses a life. And for whatever you may or may not think of Ferguson and the whole Mike Brown situation, that situation really doesn't make any difference. It just stands as an example of the fact that things like that never happen until it is so bad that there's no other way to do it. So we'll take a brief time out on that. If you have more comments you want to make on it, you're more than welcome to do so. 803-0930. We do have some things to get into in the next hour or in the next half hour of the show. And yes, I will explain to you how my dog tried to kill me. So stick around for that. We got plenty more on the way. John Grayson in for Joe Beamer. Having a good time with you on a Monday afternoon. We've got two more days of it coming up this week, tomorrow and Wednesday as well. So, yeah, glad to have you hanging around with us. And I hope you do tomorrow and Wednesday. And we'll get back to it just ahead.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You're tuned into Auto Intelligence live from Auto Trader, where data, tools, and your preferences sync to make your car shopping smooth.
They're searching inventory.
Oh, yeah.
They find what you need.
They're going to find
it. You can make a budget for your wallet to help you succeed. Pricing is precise and true.
So true.
It's smarter car shopping.
Ooh.
Just for you.
Oh, it's just for you. Ooh. Find your next ride at autotrader.com. Powered by Auto Intelligence.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. Now, I don't know if you've heard, but Mint's premium wireless is $15 a month. But I'd like to offer one other perk. We have no stores. That means no small talk.
Crazy weather we're having.
No, it's not. It's just weather. It is an introvert's dream. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Into the last half hour of the broadcast, John Grayson in for Joe Beamer. Joe will be with you just a little bit later on. He's in for Tom Bowerly today, so yeah, we're all just shifting. It's musical chairs around here. Get a scorecard, everything will be fine. We have talking to do, you and me, 803-0930. Got a bunch of stories to get into, but before I do, I've been teasing this all through the show, so we might as well get there. My dog. we got Guava, who is our Welsh Corgi. 3 years ago now. And she is a firecracker of a dog. If you know anything about corgis at all, they're tiny little dogs, but they're not. They're giant dogs that have stumpy little feet and legs. So they're only about, you know, their legs are only like 3 or 4 inches long. So they're way low to the ground, but they have big dog attitude like you would not believe. So she did two things this morning, one of which was very positive, the other which was very negative. The positive thing is we have in the backyard, and it's an open backyard, there's no fence, but in the backyard, there's an apple tree. I was told what kind of apples they were, and I can't remember, but it doesn't matter. Little round guys. And there are also deer, because it's Clarence Center, and there's deer everywhere. We went out walking the other day, and there must have been a dozen of them down the end of the street, just hanging out, you know, being deer. But there were two of them in the backyard today, picking apples down off the tree. So let the dog out, and she hauled butt off the porch right into the backyard and was barking her fool head off and chased these two deer, both of which are outweigh her by like 10 times or more, you know, probably closer to 100. These giant deer, and she chased them out of the yard, and then, even though there's no fence, stopped right at the property line. Like, yeah, and stay out too. You stay off my patch. So now either one of these deer easily could have just put a hoof down and squashed her to the ground. But they took off running because she just has that kind of confidence. Except we went out for a walk, and this is where she tried to kill me. You know, there's trails out there all over the place. So we were on one of the trails. So we walked out the door and, you know, went down the end of the block and took a left, and we're going down Goodrich, and we got to the trail and we just started walking down the trail. This is our normal route for the morning. And a couple of things about her. She's not the world's most socialized dog. She's generally kind of a house dog, but we're trying to, you know, get her out more and see more other dogs and see more other people so she doesn't freak out every time somebody knocks on the door. She's getting there, but she's still a little skittish. She doesn't like other people that she doesn't know yet. So, you know, there's a lot of people jog and walk their dogs and other stuff like that on that trail. And she doesn't like, this is weird. She doesn't like, she has this list of rules in her head about the way people are supposed to act. And if they don't act that way, it freaks her out something rotten. So an example of this is joggers. She doesn't like it when you jog. If you walk by her, that's okay. But if you jog by her, that's kind of freaky. It's like, why are you doing that? You're being weird. To the point where, you know, what are the commercials on TV? It's for one of the cholesterol drugs or something like that. And it's this big dance number. You know what I'm talking about? They've got all these people dancing around talking about how they're lowering their A1C. Yeah, that she hates that commercial. She will run up to the TV and start barking at all those people because they're being unruly. It's like, hey, stop that. Knock that off. Hey, you stop it. So that's her attitude about things. So she doesn't like joggers. And she's not real sure about other dogs. Like, if we're in the house and she sees other dogs go by, walking by outside, she'll bark at them. But if we're out on a walk, she's not home, so she doesn't have anything to protect, and she generally won't go nuts, but she will move over away from them. Well, we had the perfect storm happen on the trail this morning because there was a woman jogging by in the other direction with her dog on a leash. And Guava was there with me, and I thought she was okay because she did what she always does. She moved off to the side and was walking in the grass off the trail. And I thought, okay, cool. Well, she's found her sense of zen or whatever, so she's fine. And we got closer and closer. And one time, she turned around and looked backwards like, should I try to run back that way? And she didn't. She just kept going. So I was like, all right, cool. And they got closer and closer. And when they were almost right up on us, that's when she lost it. And she turned around to bolt back towards home. And instead of doing that, she ran right at my feet. And I was in the middle of a step. So I went right over. I mean, she tripped me. I went right over her. And I was wearing flip-flops, which was stupid. Yeah, I know. But it, you know, my foot came right out of it and bang, hit the ground as I was falling. I'm sure as gracefully as you could possibly imagine. Gossamer-like, you know, just down to the pavement softly. No, it was not that at all. I mean, butt over tea kettle, right? So that happened and I felt my big toe hit the pavement. And it stung. And I was like, oh, no. Oh, that's going to open up. I know that's going to open up. And so I grabbed it real quick because that was the only part of me that really hurt. So I just grabbed my big toe. Meanwhile, the woman with the dog stopped. And she's like, are you okay? Oh, you know, I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. And I was laughing. I mean, I'm just going, oh, dog. I love that dog so much. And I was holding on to my toe and I said, yeah, I bashed my toe. I'll be fine. It's, and she's like, do you need me to call somebody? I said, no, it's okay. I'm sure I'll be fine. No problem. So she continued walking or jogging off with her dog. And I just looked at Guava like, oh, you are so lucky you are adored in our house. And when I took my hand away, when I finally released my toe, it was worse than I thought. I knew it was going to bleed. I knew it was going to bleed, but it was so much worse than I thought. It was not life-threatening. The dog didn't really try to kill me, but... So, recognize, we were at the farthest part of the walk from the house. Like, if we keep going down the trail, we could just make the whole big circuit and come around back to the house, or we could walk back. But at that point, we were at, like, dead center of the walk, so I had to make the entire walk back. So I pulled my hand away and saw it was just a mess. It was just a mess. So I put my foot back in the flip-flop. They're made out of rubber, so I was like, all right, it's not a big deal. And started walking. And felt it. I mean, just felt that sticky feeling, you know, that you get when your foot's all covered in blood. And it was making the walk back and got about halfway back and realized that it had bled enough in, and I'm not trying to gross you out here, there's a funny end to this story. It had bled enough in my flip-flop that with every step, this cast-off, right? I've watched way too many episodes of CSI. This cast-off blood is dripping forward. So there's these blood droplets that are going down onto the sidewalk. And I was thinking about this. And again, you know, I texted my wife and said, do me a favor. I said, get out the peroxide and a big toe-sized Band-Aid and some Neosporin and an old washcloth if you can find one. So she did, and that was great. So I got home, and I texted her again and said, hey, can you come outside with the washcloth? Because I got to wrap my foot. If I don't, I'm going to leave bloody footprints all over the house. And so she did, and I got it all patched up and everything. And I told her, I said, you know, this would not be a good day for me to disappear, because if I did, you two, my wife and my sister, would be prime suspects because there is a blood trail leading all the way up to the front door of this house. So not a good day for me to disappear. You know, so if you were going to make me disappear, you might want to wait a couple of weeks until it rains a few times and washes the blood away first. So finally got all of that done and got my foot patched back up and got it wrapped and everything like that. And I could not believe if you have ever had that. And the funny thing about this is, I became the third member of our family to be really severely racked up by a dog. My sister had this giant dog named Buddy it was her current dog. That's right. Her current dog, who took off on her once and broke her shoulder, which also happened to another member of our family. If you've got a story like that, if you have had a pet that has put you in the hospital because they did something dumb, or just, you know, through happenstance, dog, you know, runs off to chase a squirrel or something like that and pulls your arm out of the socket, whatever it is, if you've got one like that, by all means, feel free to get in. We've got just a little bit of time, but 803-0930 will get you here. But yeah, I would love, it doesn't exist because we were out in the middle of nowhere, but I would love to have video of exactly how awkward that looked when I was going down over top of that dog. And I mean, she, I didn't punish her for it. She didn't do anything wrong. She just got scared. She didn't know she was going to trip me. But yeah, when I finally got all the damage assessed, like the entire bottom of my toe. I don't know if you've seen any of the Hellraiser movies, but the second Hellraiser movie is called Hellbound Hellraiser Part 2. And there's a part of that movie where the evil lady, the bad lady, it like reconstitutes herself from a stain in the attic. And, you know, first it's bones that come up out of the floor. It's a really cool set of effects, by the way. But you know, first bones come up out of the floor. And at one point in the movie, she's walking around. I don't know how they did the makeup on this. It's incredible. It must have been somebody like Rick Baker or somebody like that. But she's walking around without any skin. That's exactly what the bottom of my toe looks like right now. So if you've seen that movie and you get the reference, now you know what the whole thing looks like. Joe Beamer is coming up right after the top of the hour and has stepped in a little bit early to do some talking with us. How's it going, Joe?
It's going good. I got to be careful with this microphone. Our guest yesterday on Hardline, it came crashing down on him. So
don't you love it when that happens?
Great start to the show, but yes. No, we're good.
Good deal. So like I said, my dog tried to kill me this morning, and that was like the beginning of my day. Other than that, it's been relatively okay. And I know, I mean, you're out fairly nearby here too, right?
Just on the other side of transit. But if you just shoot down Maple, you get to my place eventually.
Right. So you know where I'm talking about. And the fact that now there are drops of blood all over Clarence Center right now, that if anybody ever needs my DNA for anything, that's where you can get it. If you really, really, I don't know why you would, but still. What do you got coming up on the big program today?
A lot of good stuff going on out there, John, but some bad stuff as well. And home ownership. People my age, you know, I'm in my late 30s. Mm-hmm. People my age can't afford a home. Right. Only 28% of houses that are listed in America today can the average American actually afford. Mm-hmm. So we're going to get into that, and I'm going to ask the question, have you given up on homeownership? Or, for the homeowners out there, is homeownership overrated? Because I am 30, I'm almost 37, I'll be 37 next month, and you know what? I love my townhouse, you know? Yeah. And here's why I love it. Oh, the disposal's broken?
Phone call.
Yeah, phone call. Like, the dryer's broken? Hey, I don't have to worry about that.
Yep.
Here's another thing. With the adjusted mortgage rate over the last 5 years, the average American with a mortgage is paying $7,300 more a year on their mortgage than if you had bought your house in 2019.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, we did, when we were in Kansas, we bought our house, right about 3 years ago. And when we sold to, you know, just a couple of months back to come here, in 3 years, the value of that house had gone up $70,000.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, that's it's great when you're on that end of it.
I was just going to say.
But when you're on the buyer end of it,
it's
like, whoa, wait a minute. 3 years ago, this house was $70,000 less than it is now. How is that possible? Now, even that market, though, and we came out of one of the last remaining hot housing markets. I mean, Shawnee, Kansas, which is where we lived, is still red hot. I mean, houses are moving in Johnson County, but it's one of, like, I don't know, a couple dozen counties that still have that kind of real estate market,
right.
And they're all in the Midwest. So, yeah, if you want to live out near the edges, forget it. You're not going to get in.
Another thing about home, 'cause again, I'm not a homeowner, so I'm not judging.
Yeah.
But, you know, out where we are, John, they're building all these new houses with no yard.
Yeah.
Again, not a homeowner, but once I finally hopefully get to that stage of my life, I'd like a yard.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, my parents live right in Amherst. Okay, that's a suburb. Right. I would think if you live out in Clarence, the whole point is you're out there.
You've got space. You've got all that. Yeah, right. There's still a ton of undeveloped space.
And they're building these houses with no yard. So I want to get into that as well. And then I do have a request out for this was on an email we got, the Texas Democrat chairman. Because the Democrat Party is at a 30-year low. Now, usually I have my talk with a Democrat Wednesday,
right.
But we didn't have it last Wednesday, so why not have it twice this week?
There you go.
If he gets back to me, we'll also have him on to see, you know, Texas. It's kind of like having the Republican chairman on in New York. What are you seeing, and what's his advice to any Democrats that are out there listening?
And how lonely are you?
Yeah, I want to ask.
I mean, a Democrat in Texas? You know, that's got to be a little bit of a lonely life.
It's another great question. And another downtown business set to close its doors, John.
What did I miss?
Misuda Chow's will be closing down in September. long list of businesses that are closing in downtown Buffalo. And that has been, I talked about it with Michael Gaynor, who's running for mayor on Hardline. That has been my focus. You know, growing up, I always looked at downtown Buffalo. And even as a kid, John, I would say, there's so much potential here.
Yeah.
And I still say that when I go downtown. And what is the reason and how do we get people back downtown? If I don't get to that part today, I just gave you a little look into tomorrow's show.
Tomorrow's show, yeah, right. Well, you know, and I am old enough to remember going to AM&A's downtown.
Okay, yeah.
With my mom, you know, as a little kid, going around and shopping at AM&A's. And it was, at that point, so we're talking 75-ish, 1975, that at that point, downtown was still... It wasn't like it was in the 50s and 60s, but it was still active, and people walked around downtown Buffalo. You know, yeah, it was like, yeah. And there were businesses to go into and visit and things like that. And yeah, through that attrition, it's happening everywhere. And it's sad to see because you're right. There is so much potential. You know what I love is I love looking at pictures of downtowns from the 50s and looking at the car dealerships and thinking what a nightmare that had to be because they were in office buildings.
Yeah.
You know, they were like the ground floor of an office building and it's a car dealership. And now we think of these big sprawling out in the boonies kind of car dealerships. But seeing that and how different life was back then because everybody lived in the city and everybody walked around the city and, you know, presumably drove around it.
I went down. I love looking at old pictures of downtown Buffalo for big events. When Lincoln's casket came through Buffalo, downtown, and some of those buildings are still there.
Yes.
And the way downtown looked and all the people are there to see Lincoln, it's like, wow. Again, not a happy moment. I'm just saying.
Sure.
All those people downtown and to see that was the center. I mean, Buffalo was so big in the mid-1800s where they picked Buffalo as a place for the train to come and for people to mourn Lincoln.
Yeah.
And now we get skipped by most major tours.
Well, I mean, think about the Pan American Exposition and, you know, where McKinley was shot.
That's right.
What an amazing piece of history. And that was here. It wasn't Chicago that got the Pan American Exposition. It wasn't New York. It was Buffalo, you know?
One of my biggest things about that is, wouldn't you have kept a few more things? I realize they were temporary buildings, but would you not have kept a few more things? Because that's a huge historic, again, not a bright spot in American history,
right?
But that's a piece of American history. We have where the president was killed and was inaugurated. Now, they have re-brought that back to what it looked like in 1901 when Teddy Roosevelt was inaugurated, but it became a diner.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, so what they did in St. Louis, because they had the 1904 World's Fair was St. Louis, and it was also the Olympics were there as part of the World's Fair, which is weird, but okay. And they, a lot of it took place in Forest Park, which is right in the middle of St. Louis. It's this giant urban park, and the History Museum is there, and there's a whole bunch of other stuff. So what they did is one of the buildings that was like the main exposition hall, yes, it was a temporary building. It was not going to survive for very long.
Right.
But they took it down after the World's Fair was over. They took it down and rebuilt it with stuff that would last. Ah. So it still looks like it did. You know, you're right. Doing something like that, it made a lot of sense, and it's become a real drawing point.
Yeah, we have a stone where McKinley was shot. Like, you know, I mean, again, a stone.
You got a stone? Wow.
And again, I love what they've done with the place where McKinley eventually died and Roosevelt was inaugurated. But to think, like, at the time, they didn't think enough to keep that it became a diner.
Yeah.
And they had to bring it back to what it was like in 1901. So it's like, I think we view things a lot differently nowadays, because now we try to preserve everything.
Yeah.
It's like the stuff that I think we should have preserved, unfortunately, is no longer here.
Right. Yeah, one of my favorite comedians, Eddie Izzard, did a bit about that. And he was talking about how in America, it's like, we've restored this building to the way it looked over 50 years ago. You know, it's like, wow, yeah. Meanwhile, the stuff in England is, you know, 600-700 years old. And it's like, oh, 50 years, huh? Well, that's nice. You give a little pat on the head. That's great. I can't wait to hear it, man. It's going to be a great show, I know.
Well, thank you, John. And another great show from you. And it was great hearing from Leslie.
Did you enjoy that? Yeah. And we did talk about you a little bit. So
And Leslie, I have only one kid. You would see the second on my Facebook.
Indeed. All right. Joe Beamer coming up right after the top of the hour for Tom Bowerly. I'm in for him, and we will do some more talking tomorrow and Wednesday here on the broadcast as well. Plenty more on the way. Have yourself a wonderful afternoon. I have to go to the hardware store. That's my big, exciting life. So plenty more on the way. News at the top of the hour is next.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Coming at you live from Auto Trader, here's New Car Energy.
They're searching inventory. You can make a budget for your wallet to help you succeed. It's smarter car shopping just for
Find
you.
Find your next ride at autotrader.com, powered by Auto Intelligence.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now, imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With the Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Check out the link in the description for more information on rates and fees. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy.
The Gemini credit card is issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice, and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other cost information, see rates and fees. The Gemini credit card may not be used to make gambling-related purchases.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.